So, what happened last night?
Well, we got back to hers.
Yeah.
Put on some music and I made my move.
Nice.
She kind of went really still.
Oh.
She didn't want a kiss, so obviously she wanted to go further.
That's not...
And she pushed me away.
Mate.
All playful.
Listen to yourself. Going still, not kissing, pushing you away. You got to know three times that night. So, what did you do next?
Sex without consent is rape. Always be sure. To learn more, search Disrespect Nobody.
Shh! It's time to say goodnight to inefficient night storage heaters. Bulky, unattractive, with no precise control, leaving you boiling in the morning and rather chilly at night. So tune in to Fisher Future Heat. Home heating systems that give you a steady, controllable supply of heat 24 hours a day. Search Fisher Future Heat today. Fisher Future Heat. The future is electric.
Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Tristan Riddell.
And I'm Matt Hansen.
And you're listening to the Nerd Party.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
All right, well, welcome to episode 9. Today, we are going to be talking about our favorite movies to watch during the Halloween season because, you know, it's October. We're getting closer and closer to Halloween. So now is the time to talk about it and watch it and just absorb it. But before we get into that, folks, we have a little bit of news that we want to talk about. And unless you've been living under a rock, you've seen the Avengers Age of Ultron trailer. Now, Matt, you and I geeked out about this on our own time as well as publicly. I need to know your thoughts.
Do you want me to go first? Because we could be here for an hour.
Well, I'll try to reel you back in because I was genuinely excited about this too.
It's safe to say, as far as comic book movies are concerned, Age of Ultron is my most anticipated movie as far as comic book goes for next year. And we had all heard earlier this week that the trailer was supposed to be premiering with this week's S.H.I.E.L.D. on Tuesday. Well, I don't know if it was a Marvel insider or someone who just had access to the trailer beforehand, but it was leaked Wednesday afternoon. And then Marvel, I think, had a brilliant response to this. Instead of just trying to lock down the trailer and try to close a bunch of accounts, they tweeted out the damn it Hydra treat. And they just released it in HD so that everybody could see it. And holy crap, does this look amazing.
Now, I'm glad that you brought that up, because before we start talking about the framework of the trailer and what made it completely awesome, I am still not entirely convinced that this was a quote-unquote leak. I still think it's very possible that this was a planned leak. Now, I'm not complaining, because I don't care either way, because the trailer was awesome, and whether it was planned on Marvel's part in order to get us to talk about it a little bit more and just to get the news stories to write about it more, I don't think it matters, because it's cool either way. Like, whether it's planned or whether it's not, it was just a little too neat and tidy for me to believe that it was a pure leak, because the quality of the original leak was just a little bit too good.
It still looked like it was recorded off of a camcorder, the first one.
It looked like it was a pretty good quality as far as the leaks go, because normally the type of leaks that we get are like a handy cam. It's off kilter, it's out of focus, and everything like that. Or if it's a rip, it's like super, super small. This was like almost SD quality. But like I said, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it's a possibility, because lots of companies have done that before.
Well, I would be surprised. I mean, I think Marvel knew either way that whenever this trailer was going to be released, it would be the most talked about thing. And I think having it leaked made it even more like, you must see this before it gets potentially torn down.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And it brought a cool anticipation to it, where like all of a sudden I noticed in my Twitter feed and even in Tumblr and everywhere that people are saying, okay, it leaked. Watch it before they take it down. Watch it before you take it down. And for like, I lasted about 15 minutes where I said,
yes, you went on a whole tirade about how, why can't you let me wait, internet? You were so adamantly against a leak.
I was, because, you know, I've said it on the show several times before. I'm a pixel junkie. I don't want to see something obscured and weird. I want to see it in the form that
well,
it was
no
meant to
one's
be watched.
Twisting your arm.
I know, I completely admit it. I'm a weak individual, and I just couldn't stand it because people kept posting GIFs of it. And I was like, oh my god, this looks awesome. And so I just hit click play, and it was amazing. I was thrilled.
Well, let's talk about the structure real quick, and something that I definitely came away from watching this trailer, and I think many other people have too, is that I was always confident of James Spader doing the voice of Ultron, but actually hearing it, what it probably will sound like, I'm now even more convinced that I was right, and that he was the perfect casting choice for this character.
You're absolutely right, and I remember that you and I were talking when this happened, that there were people who were skeptical, and it was just so weird to hear that. I was like you and I are fans of his work, and as I was talking with you, I wrote my thesis on James Spader. Like, okay, so I know the work of James Spader, and I'm in love with his voice. I think he's a great actor. I'm in love with his verve, his presence. When he was on Boston Legal as Alan Shore, he gave amazing closing arguments where you just fell in love with his voice and the way that he presented himself. And when he was Robert California on The Office, like, he had this intimidating tone, and he was just talking about paper, and he still intimidated you. So just imagine what he could do with Ultron. And it sounds like he's going to give us a lot of great one-liners that we're going to quote throughout the entire movie, because from this trailer, people on the internet are already quoting him from this trailer.
Oh, of course, because he's got what I think is one of the most, is going to become one of the most well-known one-liners of the movie, if it indeed is in the movie and not just mm-hmm. a trailer line.
Right.
But the whole "there are no strings on me," that sort of thing, and mm-hmm. it is becoming a cliche to take innocent children's songs and make them creepy in trailers. But I gotta say, taking the Pinocchio song and putting that as the background music to this trailer, it might be cliche, but it's cliche because it works, and it worked with me.
Yeah, it worked with me too, because at first I didn't quite recognize it because I'm not a huge Pinocchio fan, but my wife is, and she of course said, like, "You idiot, come on, it's awesome, realize what you're listening to." And just like, I love how they mixed it, they slowed it down, they got a child to sing it creepily, I think, and then all of a sudden it blended into him. He said all of a sudden the song gets replaced by his voice, and people are going to try to imitate that as much as they try to imitate Bane's voice in The Dark Knight Rises.
Yes, but credit to Age of Ultron, again, maybe showing my Marvel bias here, I can understand Spader.
Yeah, I think Spader's a little bit easier to understand than Bane. And I'm glad that you kind of prefaced that when you said, like, this is what we think he's going to sound like, because nobody knows until it gets released, because modulation of voices and special effects and everything is done up until almost the last possible moment. And that's how it was with Bane's voice.
And that's what I was kind of surprised to see people say, well, the CGI looks kind of incomplete and shoddy. And I'm like, you idiots, you realize it's not done yet.
Yeah, it's a trailer. And this is an early trailer.
I mean, we've got, it's October now. It comes out in May. We've got about 7 months until release. That's a long time.
The whole world has seen this trailer. And obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, you're a nerd, you're a geek, you've seen it. We're just going to go over the quick points. Like, I thought the opening was quite amazing because we got to see the proto-Ultron.
Yes, because we know it's been told to the press and various news outlets that they're altering the story a bit, and Tony Stark is actually going to be the one who creates Ultron in this version of the story. And what I like about it is at the beginning, when you see that broken version of what I guess is going to be the first form of Ultron come out, it's a variation on the Iron Man suit.
Yeah, it looks like it was cobbled together from bits and pieces of other Iron Man suits, because as we saw in Iron Man 3, Stark went a little crazy on his suits and made a whole crap load of them, and then, of course, destroyed them. Spoiler alert. And so maybe we're seeing the remains of this. And also, we don't quite know exactly how Tony Stark creates Ultron. It could be, I don't know, obviously,
well,
inadvertently.
I have a theory. You want to hear my theory?
Yeah, I want to hear your theory, yeah.
Well, we all know from, if you haven't seen Captain America the Winter Soldier yet, at the end of Captain America the Winter Soldier, S.H.I.E.L.D. is disbanded. There is no more S.H.I.E.L.D. And so I think what's going to happen, and really this kind of fits in with the tone of the trailer, is I think Tony Stark in his egomaniacal sort of way is going to sort of privatize world security through him and the Avengers, mm-hmm. instead of, because there is no more S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore. And I think he's going to create Ultron as a method of doing that. But something obviously is going to go awry. And that's why you get Robert Downey Jr. saying that this is the end of the path that I started us on. That's where I think that's going. But
I think that's a valid theory. And it also would give a little credence to the Civil War storyline that that might possibly happen. It hasn't been confirmed yet, but we do know that Robert Downey Jr. is going to play a much heavier role than he was originally going to play in Captain America 3.
Well, we think there's actually, I don't know how many people know this, but I keep up with this sort of stuff. There's going to be a major Marvel Studios press event on Tuesday. They don't say what it's for, but there's some sort of press event that has to do with Marvel Studios, so they might be announcing something Tuesday, so we will see.
Okay, well, yeah, stay tuned, but by the time you're listening to this, will have already happened, and so you guys are the lucky few who are in the future. I'm actually reading the Civil War storyline right now, because as you know, like, you're the Marvel person, I'm the DC, and so I never read it before, and I'm reading it right now, and it's quite interesting.
It sounds interesting. Now, keep in mind, guys, I have to out myself here a bit. I'm a Marvel guy, but I know the movies. Like, I haven't read a lot of the comics. So
you're a cinematic universe Marvel guy.
I'm a cinematic universe kind of guy. And really, I like other things that Marvel does, too. X-Men movies and the such. But I think it kind of helps my perspective, because I'm not so beholden to the comic that it must be exactly like the comic on the screen.
Yeah.
But from what I've read of Civil War, it does sound interesting. They're obviously going to have to change it a bit, because there's not too many secret identities in this cinematic universe. But thinking about it, it could be interesting, and they might be able to do it and have Bucky Barnes play a part, because not everybody knows that he's the Winter Soldier. So that could be a secret identity thing.
Yeah. I'm kind of hoping, according to this announcement of yours on Tuesday that you talked about, I know this is a dream world that's never going to happen, but I would love it if they announced on Tuesday that they reached a deal where they could have like a one-time appearance of Spider-Man or something in the third Avengers movie or a Civil War storyline, because Spider-Man plays a huge role in the Civil War storyline in the comic books. And I think that would be interesting.
It would be interesting. I don't know if, you know, it'd be cool. I'm not going to say no to if it happens, but I don't think Marvel Studios is in the position of even needing Spider-Man at this point, because they've built their own framework so much to the point where these Avenger films are even outgrossing the Spider-Man films at this point. So I think Spider-Man needs the Avengers more than the Avengers needs Spider-Man, if you know what I mean.
I think you're absolutely correct. I think it would be fun to see, but I don't think it's needed whatsoever. And a lot of people actually like the separation between Spider-Man and X-Men and the Avengers and whatnot. But let's get back to it. Let's get back
the
to
trailer,
it. So
yes.
So we have Ultron, who is this proto being, and then we kind of see his evolution throughout the trailer, which I really like, because we got a magazine release of a cover on, I think it was Entertainment Weekly,
and it has Tony Stark and Captain America and Ultron on it.
And the Ultron we see at the end of the trailer is very different from the one that we see on the magazine cover. So all we can assume is that this is his mid-level evolution. Because
right.
It definitely wasn't the proto one that we saw at the beginning, and it wasn't the one that had a much more articulate face. At the end, where he said, "There are no strings on me."
But we don't know for sure. I mean, no. That could be it. And maybe they're just using that image of Ultron for the cover, because that's what it looks like in the comic books.
Maybe they're trying
not to give it all his look all away at once. I don't know.
It's very true. We can't bank on anything. Even what they release before the movie, even what is confirmed from Whedon and Marvel and other people, it doesn't matter. it's not until the movie is released will all the answers be given.
But once Ultron comes out and does his little speech in front of the Avengers the first time, where he crushes the other Iron Man suit, mm-hmm. and we start getting the song, this trailer kind of confirms for me a theory that I mentioned on this very show about superhero series, is that the second film is always more darker and more personal. Mm-hmm. It happened with Captain America 2. It happened with it's obviously happening here. It happened with, if we count the new X-Men films as their own trilogy, it happened with Days of Future Past.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like they're actually going to go through some really horrible stuff in this one. And We'll see who makes it out unscathed this time.
See, that's the thing, is that, like, just to keep going with the trailer, I mean, the things that we kind of see is we see Tony Stark as Iron Man in his Hulkbuster outfit, his armor, and attacking the Hulk. And then we see, so obviously there's some sort of strife between the two of them. And then we see a broken Captain America shield, which is just heartbreaking.
We see Thor lift up Tony Stark by the neck.
That's right. And we see Thor just absolutely lose it. Like, he's like screaming at the sky, and he's like, he's naked in water or something like that. So we don't know if he lost his powers again or what's going on with him. And plus,
I don't know if you saw it, but there's a real quick, wide shot of all of them. I guess that they're in one of the jets or something, and they're all sitting around looking defeated. And Mark Ruffalo is wrapped up in a blanket, looking like really terrible.
Yeah, he looks really dejected, and he's just like, it kind of makes me think like maybe he wasn't in complete control when he was Hulk. Maybe something went wrong where he's no longer able to even somewhat control the Green Monster.
My theory behind Ruffalo losing it, I think, has to do with the new characters we're getting in this film, which is Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch. And Scarlet Witch in particular, from what I've been told by my dad, who is a comic book fan, her powers have to do with mind control and hexes and that sort of thing. She's basically magic.
Okay.
So I think she's going to mess with the Avengers' heads, because at several points in the trailer, we see those two characters with Ultron. So I think they're going to start off as evil.
Yeah, that's one shot that we saw, is that those two characters are just hanging out with Ultron. They're not fighting Ultron. They're not trying to get away. They're just with him.
Right, which makes me think maybe Ultron breaks them out of that prison that they're in the end of Winter Soldier with. Who knows?
Yeah, we don't know, but I think that's a very good theory. And just, we see a lot of strife, a lot of negative emotions going around, a lot of collateral damage. Hopefully not as much as in Man of Steel, but I just can't wait. Like, and as you know, I'm not that big of a Marvel fan. I appreciate the movies, but I don't fall head over heels for every single one. I like the first Iron Man, the first Thor, and Captain America 2. That's about it. Like, the rest of the movies are just okay in my humble opinion. But this one, I've seen this trailer, I don't know how many times, dozens of times, and I've even just listened to it, and I still got chills just from listening to it. I am very excited.
I am too, and I do want to address, though, an issue that was brought up, is that this trailer is very, very dark, and there are people who I think are concerned that there isn't a lot of the fun interactions that were present in the first Avengers film. And I think that that is still going to be there. I'm not too worried about that. I think they're just highlighting that this is going to be a very different plot from the last film.
Well, see, the thing is, like, people who are worried about that must not know Whedon's work. You look at Joss Whedon and look at his style. He mixes humor and darkness very effortlessly. If you look at Buffy, Angel, Firefly, All of that has really dark situations dealing with demons and death and murder and violence, but he's able to bring the humanity out of that and find the humor within that that shows how people can survive these dire situations. Not making light of these situations, but show how hope and humanity can survive. And so I'm not worried at all.
I'm not worried at all, and there's a rumor going around that there's going to be even more footage, because the trailer was leaked, quote-unquote, mm-hmm. There's going to be even more footage released with this week's S.H.I.E.L.D. episode still, to keep that exclusiveness happening. And there's a theory that that some of the footage from Comic-Con was going to be showed, and there's a specific scene, I don't know if you've read about this, Tristan, but there's a scene that was shown at Comic-Con of all the Avengers hanging out in the tower. You kind of see them hanging out in the tower in the trailer.
It's right, yeah, right before the proto-Ultron comes out.
It's supposed to be them hanging out in the tower, and it's them all kind of drinking and hanging out, and then they all try to pick up Thor's hammer. which you can't pick up because, you know, you have to be as worthy as Thor is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I remember I read that, yeah.
So you have supposedly Tony Stark and Rhodey from the films trying to pick it up with their Iron Man stuff, and they can't do it, and everybody's trying to take a turn lifting Thor's hammer. So that says to me that humor and that banter will still be in the film.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're absolutely right, and I trust in Whedon Wholeheartedly. All right, well, we've been talking about this trailer for about 20 minutes now, and I think that's pretty good for us, because we could definitely go on for another 20 minutes, but...
Needless to say, I'm excited. I'm very excited, and I'm excited to see more as we roll into these next 7 months.
That is the cliff notes of the conversation. Matt and I are very excited. Well, Halloween movies. What Halloween movies do you like to see during October, during the season? Because I've already started mine. I start October 1st. Is where I start going into my rotation, and I have a rotation every year. I try to vary it up, but I have a select few that are my staples that I need to watch every single fall. And but what I'd love to hear is let's do it like we have done with our previous episodes, where we list maybe we list four rapid fire and then explain those four.
Well, actually, I kind of mixed it up here. I got a collection of movies, and I've got a collection of specials that I watched during the season too. So,
well, that works.
I tried to be a little bit eclectic with mine and not just horror films, although it's comprised mostly of horror films.
Well, I would imagine coming from you that it was mostly horror films. But okay, I'll go ahead and start it off, and so I'll list four right off the bat: Shaun of the Dead, Interview with the Vampire, Sweeney Todd, The Demon Barber of Fleet Street, and The Village.
The Village?
Yes. Okay. All right. I don't want to hear any crap from you. I don't want to hear that exasperated sound from you, because I'll start with The Village.
I'm going to try to maintain the peace during this show, but off air, I just want to let the listeners know, Tristan has criticized some of my taste in my own horror films, and I get it. My taste is not for everyone. But then you have no place insulting mine when one of your favorite films is The Village.
Well, now, I did not say that this was a horror film.
It doesn't matter. It's a bad film.
No, this is a good film, and I'll tell you why.
Okay. Well, if I knew that was your taste, I've got several Shyamalan films to recommend to you.
Well, there's a select few of Shyamalan, or however you pronounce his name, films that I like. I don't like his latest work. I like his earlier work.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're probably, if you like The Village, you're all over The Happening.
Oh my God, I hate The Happening. I'm a Signs fan. I'm a Sixth Sense fan. I'm a Village fan, obviously. And I'm an Unbreakable fan. I like Unbreakable. And
a lot of
people
do like Unbreakable, but Village fan, you might be one of the very few in the whole world.
I am one of the few, and it always confused me. Actually, one of my first films that I actually made myself, that right when I got to college, it was snowing. And it was glorious, and my campus is really beautiful. My alma mater campus is really beautiful, and it was the first snow. And so I grabbed a girl and said, let's go make a movie. And so I just filmed her and me walking through the snow, and I put the score to The Village to it. And it was great. I loved it, and it was kind of it was my first step into a much larger world of video production. And so it'll always hold a special place in my heart. But that's one of the things that makes this movie great is the score. The soundtrack is phenomenal. It's one of the best soundtracks, one of the best scores to any movies that I've ever heard. And I love the casting. I think the casting is fantastic. It made me fall in love with Bryce Dallas Howard. It has William Hurt in it, Sigourney Weaver, your girl, Sigourney Weaver. It has Joaquin Phoenix. It has Adrian Brody. It has Cherry Jones. It has so many great actors. And I just love, and I say this word all the time on the Nerd Party, I love the aesthetic. I love the feeling. And the reason why I like to watch it during the Halloween season is it takes place during the fall. It's isolated in the woods. It has a monster that we think that we have to be wary of. And it's just everybody's freaked out about the monster. There's, you know, like it comes out at nighttime. It has a color red, which is very common in horror films. And it's just this, the very feeling of it is just spurs me. It just gets me going. The Village to me is like a warm blanket that I want to wrap myself up in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it is a movie like much of Shyamalan's movies that is hingent on a twist.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you hitch your chariot to a twist, it better be one that everybody likes. Because if people don't like it, your whole and your movie's dependent on it collapses. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the main problem with the Village for me and a lot of people.
Yeah, and I respect that. I love the twist, but I understand that not everybody does. But okay, so I spoke a long time on The Village, and I won't do that for every movie. It was just because you got exasperated.
I was going to say, you defend yourself, sir. What makes The Village so great? But I'm glad you went into it.
So I'll go backwards in reverse order. So we got Sweeney Todd here. I love Sweeney Todd. I love Johnny Depp. I love the play. I am absolutely obsessed with the play. I love Sondheim. I love Angela Lansbury. And I actually have a signed, framed photo on my bedroom wall of Angela Lansbury as her character, Mrs. Lovett, in Sweeney Todd. And underneath that, I have a signed photograph, an 8x10, of Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter as their characters in Sweeney Todd from the movie, right underneath it. And I love everything about it. I love the songs. I sing it with my wife all the time when we're in the car and even when we're in the house. I think it's creepy Burton, and I love creepy Burton. I don't like stupid, weird, cartoony Burton all the time. Like, I don't like Alice in Wonderland. I hated that, and I can't even remember some of the other his recent stuff. But
Dark Shadows.
Yeah, Dark Shadows was horrible. I don't like. After Sweeney Todd, everything was just garbage, and so you'll hear a lot of Burton's work on this list, and then we go into Shaun of the Dead, which I mean, there's nothing you can say about Shaun of the Dead. I mean, other than that
hasn't
already
been
said
in the last 10 years.
I will watch that whenever it's on TV. It has so much rewatchability, and the characters are great. It's funny. It gives you some scares, and you care about the characters. It's just a well written movie. It was the beginning of the Cornetto trilogy, which we all know and love, and then we have Interview with the Vampire, which this could be one of my favorite movies of all time. I love Anne Rice as an author. I love that they made this movie. This movie captured the tone of the book perfectly. Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt together, I think, had a great dynamic and great chemistry. And this was Kirsten Dunst when I actually liked Kirsten Dunst. She was a fantastic actress as a child. And just, it was scary. It was gory. It was erotic. It was everything that you wanted out of a vampire film, and this is the best vampire film ever made, hands down. I'll argue anybody who says otherwise.
It is one of the few vampire films that I can actually sit down and watch. I'm not that big on vampires, to be honest with you, but I did like Interview with the Vampire. It wasn't too scary to me, but I did like the characterization. I liked the people in it. I do think I'll still say it's Kirsten Dunst's best film.
Oh yeah.
Because as she got older, I got less and less enamored with her. But when she was that age, yeah, she was really good at playing older than herself. So, yeah, I'm with you on that one. Interview with the Vampire is good.
All right. Well, that was my first four. Give me your next four. I've been talking for a while.
Well, I like slasher films. Mm-hmm. And it's just it's a vice of mine, although I don't consider it a vice. You know, I like what I like. And I guess part of it is I like seeing how humanity can go wrong, or the dark side of humanity, or however cheesy that sounds. I like that aspect of it. So obviously my go-to during Halloween is the Halloween trilogy. And yes, I say trilogy because even though I can watch all those films, there are 10 total. There are three that I always watch every Halloween night, and that's 1, 2 and H2O. And I'll explain why in a minute. I love watching anything Alfred Hitchcock. Psycho, Rear Window, The Birds. He's one of my favorite directors of Hollywood's golden age, if you will. Mm-hmm. Just because I'm always still a kid at heart, I always record whenever ABC rebroadcasts Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown. And, you know, it's one of those things that makes me feel happy. God, there's like just whatever I feel like at the moment, because I've got like all the Friday the 13th. I've got all the Nightmares. I've got, you know, a really great film that I love, but I watch more in November, called Black Christmas.
Tell us about that one.
Oh, Black Christmas? Black Christmas. Okay. Black Christmas is kind of it's a Canadian made horror film from 1974. It's kind of the proto Halloween in a sense, because it establishes a lot of the modern tropes of a slasher, but it's less well known. Takes place obviously over the Christmas season, in a sorority house where a bunch of sorority girls are there over the holidays. Someone who you never see, which I kind of like, sneaks into the attic of the house and starts killing off everybody. And it actually stars some people that you may recognize. We have Olivia Hussey as the lead, who was, of course, Juliet in the 1968 version of the movie. You have Keir Dulé from 2001 A Space Odyssey playing her boyfriend. And you also have, kid you not, Margot Kidder in the movie. Pre-Superman, she plays, surprise, surprise, the alcoholic sorority sister.
Yeah. Stretch.
And then also you have, I don't know if you're familiar with her, but Andrea Martin, she's a comedic actress. She's in films like My Big Fat Greek Wedding. She was also the first person who played Quark's mother on Deep Space Nine.
Oh, yeah.
You have her as a younger woman as one of the sorority sisters, too. So it's kind of this eerie little thing where the killer will call them and make some really disturbing noises over the phone. It's one of those first the calls are coming from inside the house film. In fact, I think it's actually the first one that does that. But it's very interesting. I encourage people who are into this sort of film to check it out. If you're not into slashers, it probably won't change your mind. But if you are and you like kind of that 70s aesthetic, I think it's for you. It's worth a watch. Let me talk about Halloween. Not that I haven't talked about it enough, but I watched the three films that have Jamie Lee Curtis's character in them because those three tell a nice story, if you're a fan of the films, of course. But I think one of the reasons that I'm going to hold up that first film as my favorite scary movie, and I've seen it already twice this season, is that it created a lot of things for me that really stuck out to me. And Tristan, we talked about before the show how we kind of like the fact that when we like a movie, we go beyond just the acting and the plot, and we go down to editing, music, cinematography choices, the ability to pull off something that's not easy. Because the story behind Halloween is you have this young filmmaker, John Carpenter, who had a couple of films under his belt. If you saw, there was a recent remake of it, Assault on Precinct 13.
Mm-hmm.
That was originally his film back in the 70s that was remade with Lawrence Fishburne and the like today. But that was his film. He had a couple of others under his belt, but Halloween is the thing that put him on the map. And what I find so fascinating about that film is the way that everything comes together, in the sense because it was made for $325,000, which is... which sounds like a lot to the layperson, but I'm sure you know, Tristan, that for 1978, that's a really, really low budget to make a feature-length film on.
Yeah, even in the 70s, that's nothing.
And $25,000 of that went to Donald Pleasance because he was an actual known quantity at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that $25,000 got him for 3 days. And the thing I like about it is that you're dealing with people who, with that limited resources, who... The film really has to be a labor of love at that point, because you have actors working for very little money. You don't have the Hollywood system built in. I mean, they tell stories from the set that the actors did stuff on the set. They would paint leaves to be thrown to simulate the fall season in Illinois. That house, that Michael Myers' house at the beginning, when it's all nice and put back together, they had to paint and whitewash it themselves, because it actually looked like what it looks like later in the film when it's all decrepit.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, they had to do that themselves. A friend of one of the producers cooked lunch for the whole crew every day. I mean, there was no catering. It was all a labor of love. And what I like about that is it feels genuine in a sense. It doesn't feel like a studio production. It feels like, you know, this is the movie we all wanted to make.
Yeah,
that sort of thing. And as far as the movie itself goes, there are just so many choices that I love about it, because you think back to the 70s and you think back to the idea of suburbia. And back in the 70s, at least, suburbia was supposed to be a place where the crime didn't happen. That was all in urban centers of cities, you know, where gangs and drugs and the like were occurring. Suburbia was supposed to be like the nice white picket fences part of America, where, you know, everybody knew each other, and, you know, everybody did everything together, and nothing bad happened in suburbia. And I liked that this was kind of the first film to subvert those expectations, and that suburbia can feel very dangerous, and
mm-hmm.
ugly things can happen there, and
things are bubbling underneath, just under the surface of the shiny veneer.
Yes, it's not the nice, you know, Norman Rockwell painting we think it is, that sort of thing. I think the cast works very well in this together. Jamie Lee Curtis, this is the film that gave her a career. She widely acknowledges it, which I really like, because you see a lot of big-name Hollywood actors who, when they get their start in horror films, they kind of shun it later as that thing that they had to do to get by. But she, what I like about her is she fully embraces the fans. She was at a convention a couple years ago and told lots of interesting stories. And but it was also genuine, and I just love the direction that was used. There's very little blood. Mm-hmm. Things are lit in shadow. There's a brilliant shot in the film that I think is my favorite shot in any film, any horror movie that I love. And it's toward the end where the Jamie Lee Curtis character has discovered her dead friends in the house, and she's leaning against this wall, and there's a room of blackness behind her, and then slowly but surely the light comes up and you can see the William Shatner mask mm-hmm. that Michael Myers wears, and it's just so subtle, it's so brilliant, and the music that they use to accompany with it is just so it's so fitting for that scene that, you know, I think that it's a film where every technical choice made was the correct one. Less is more. Let the story and the effects speak for themselves. And I really think there's a genuine quality about that movie that, quite frankly, is lost in Hollywood horror movies today. So,
yeah, the days of horror in the 70s and 80s of in Hollywood is very much past. It's the horror stories that we get today are really pretty much just how much can we get away with, and how much torturing women can we get away with, and how much gore, and how
convoluted it can be. I mean, because even if you don't like the film itself, the story is very simple. Like, it's just so its simplicity is its beauty, I think. When you try to make things too complicated, it gets less frightening.
Yeah, I agree. I'm much more of a fan of the thriller than I am the horror, and I think Halloween, the movie, is very much more towards thriller than it is what we know horror today.
So that's kind of my long-winded defense of Halloween, but you know, I kind of want people to understand that it's not just the slashing aspect that I like. I think the creativity and the behind the scenes of that movie is fascinating, and that for amateur filmmakers, they really pulled off something great, because until the Blair Witch Project, I don't know if you know this, it was the most profitable independent movie ever made. It was made on a budget of $325,000 and grossed, it's 1978 dollars, over $70 million.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty good return on your investment. And every movie wishes they could be that lucky. Well, in order to keep moving and to keep going on our list, I'll go ahead and list some more of mine. And it's I'll list the next four, and some of these you might laugh at, but next on my list is Tim Burton's Sleepy Hollow, The Rocky Horror Picture Show, The Nightmare Before Christmas, and of course, Alien.
Of course.
And I'm saving one for the very last, because it means something. It's very special to me. But with Sleepy Hollow, this was another Burton film that I absolutely loved, and this was before he got all, you know, just a pure CGI and Disney and candy. I loved the view of it. I loved the desaturation. I loved how Ichabod Crane was a coward and he was thrust into the situation. I love that Christopher Walken was the horseman. That's just fantastic. And I thought Christina Ricci did a great job, even though it was weird seeing her as a blonde. It's I love the costume, the feeling. I loved everything about it. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a masterpiece. It was just, it was good and fun. It was just a home run, in my opinion. And then you have Nightmare Before Christmas, which, I mean, come on. I mean, like, I saw this in the theater when I was very young. My mom has always been obsessed with the macabre, and Halloween is her favorite holiday throughout the year. And so she kind of transferred on that onto me. And so we laughed together at the weird jokes about death and decay. And always just kind of been like, my mother's just always a little bit twisted, and I was always been thankful that she's been a little bit twisted, because it's made me appreciate some of the darker things in life. And Nightmare Before Christmas is one of those things where it's kind of a kid-friendly version of that, and for that I appreciate it. And of course, I love musicals, and the music's great in this one. And this one actually helped create a better singing voice out of me, because I was able to model my voice after Danny Elfman's bit better than anybody else's.
Danny Elfman, who knew? You know, it was like, I think of him right? mainly as a composer.
I know. And he just did a concert last year on Halloween where he had a full orchestra behind him, and he sang all of the Jack songs from Nightmare Before Christmas. It was fantastic. I didn't go, but I saw a video of it. It was just great. And then we have Rocky Horror Picture Show, which this is such a fun film.
Now, I have to ask you up front, Tristan, have you, one of the benefits I love living in Tucson is that we have an independent movie house here called the Loft Cinema. And every month, I think it's the second Saturday of every month, they will have a screening of Rocky Horror at midnight where everybody gets dressed up and you have a shadow cast in front of it. And mm-hmm. they just go full out, games, de-virginizing the virgins, quote unquote. Have you ever been to one of these special screenings, or do they even have them in Illinois? Because they're such fun things to do here. I've seen this movie a lot.
They have them all over the country. It's not just where you are. They have them all over the country.
I know, I'm fortunate enough to have one where I am.
Yeah, they have them in Illinois, and since I live near Chicago, they definitely have them there. But I'm sad to say, it's one of my great shames. I've never gone. My wife and I always want to go. We want to do the whole thing. We want to have the squirt guns. We want to have the newspapers. We want to do everything. We want to shout things at the screen. We've read all about it, but we just haven't found the opportunity. And I watched this as a kid, probably too young. I was probably a little too young when I saw it, but it was one of those movies that was dangerous to me. Like it was something that I wasn't supposed to watch.
And something seedy.
Yeah, it was something seedy where it dealt with transvestites and homosexuality and creating a man and just de-virginizing, see if you were just talking about that. And it was wrong and sexual and weird and, you know, it's just cross-dressing. And
you have Barry Bostwick and Susan Sarandon in their underwear for most of the film.
Exactly. I felt like Barry Bostwick throughout the movie. As I was watching it, I was like, oh my God, you can't do that. And you can't show that on screen. You can't be enjoying what's going on to you. And so I felt like a little rebel when I watched it. I felt dangerous because no one else I knew knew that about that movie. No one knew about its existence. So I felt cool, and I felt like a rebel without a cause. And it's just, and so that's always stuck with me. And thankfully, when I started dating my now wife, I showed it to her, and I was like, oh God, she's going to think I'm weird because I love this movie. But then it turns out that she's like, no, I love that movie. And she kind of showed me this whole world where everybody loves this movie, and it's a cult classic. And it was just, as I said, this will always hold a special place in my heart just for all those myriad of reasons. And for Alien, I'm not even going to talk about Alien.
Well,
because
we just did a whole episode.
We just did a whole episode, and Alien's just fantastic. And you
see episode 8 for our thoughts.
And every other episode, practically.
But I will say I do like Rocky Horror Picture Show. However, I do feel that it's more fun to watch with the audience. And when you do get that experience, Tristan, I think you'll agree. It's actually takes it to a whole nother level.
I need to do it so bad because I would easily dress up as Frankenfurter.
I don't know if I want to see you.
I don't think anybody wants to see me that way, but it's going to happen.
And I'm even that way inclined, and I don't want to see you dressed as Frankenfurter.
So. All right. Well, I don't want to give away my final movie before I hear some more movies out of you. So give me talk about a few movies that you love to watch during Halloween time.
Well, let me talk about a movie that I think, if I don't count Jumanji as a horror movie, I think it was my first horror film that I ever was allowed to see when I was, I think I couldn't have been older than 11. I'm a big Stephen King fan. I read a lot of his books, and I like mm-hmm. a lot of his book-to-film adaptations. In fact, I'm hoping maybe one day we can do an episode on what I consider of some of the best ones. But one of the first ones that I ever saw was the first film that was ever one of his adaptations, and that was Carrie from 1976. Sissy Spacek, Piper mm-hmm. Laurie. I still watch. In fact, I think I watched it last week because it's on Netflix streaming. And I just remember being so messed up by that movie when I was 11. It gave me that love of being scared. It was my first sleepless night from a horror movie, but it's just acted so beautifully. And for most of it, it's not really a horror film in the conventional sense of people dying and stuff like that. You just see this girl's life and how terrible it is. And Sissy Spacek gives an amazing performance that I think can never be replicated, as the remakes have shown. Mm-hmm. But she's just so quietly tortured and brilliant. And Piper Laurie, of course, as the mother, is one of the most frightening religious fanatics to ever be captured on screen. And the funny thing about that is, I don't know what she was thinking at the time, but she kind of thought that because her character was written so over the top that it was supposed to be a dark comedy and not a horror film. So she played it as such, but it still comes across as really, really scary. So, and of course, the whole prom scene at the end just kind of messed me up because, you know, seeing everybody die like that. And I've never seen somebody's eyes open wide so big as the way Sissy Spacek do in that scene where it almost seems unnatural.
Yeah, only she can do that.
And oh, so you've seen the original version then?
I have seen a lot of the original version, but it's one of those movies that I haven't seen all of it.
I think you'll still like it. You might run against the same kind of impediments that other 70s films have for you, and mainly the fact that most of the high school students are played by 20-somethings.
Yeah, you know, and I can't stand that.
You just gotta let that go though, because that's even today. Like, most of the high school students are played by 20-somethings today.
Yeah, but, like, as we talked about, like, in the Halloween movie, like, some of those people were in their 30s.
Well, one was in their 30s, but okay, so in this movie you got Nancy Allen, who you know from some, perhaps, the RoboCop films.
Oh, yeah.
Playing the lead bitch of the film. You actually have one of the one of the girls from Halloween is actually in Carrie. She's Nancy Allen's best friend with the little hat with the rainbows on it and stuff like that. She's also in Halloween as a girl who was saying totally all the time.
Okay, so was she in her 40s yet?
No, she was in her 20s. You just gotta let it go, man.
I can't.
Yeah, you can. It's called suspension of disbelief. It's what a good audience member can do.
Ooh, claws are coming out.
And you also have, it's John Travolta's first movie.
I forgot he was in that.
Yeah, and he's got to be 20-something in that, too. So, you know, and Sissy Spacek was 26, but it doesn't matter. They all give the performances that are needed. And they're so good that, like, they kind of transcend age for me. It's kind of like, I don't know. We even have the reverse of it today where I see someone like Jennifer Lawrence, for example, and I could see her, you know, she's 23. She's younger than I am. Mm-hmm. But she's such a good actress that she could pull off playing someone who's 30 when she's, you know, 22.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it just depends on the kind of performance that people give.
And that's fun to see. I like to see the reverse of that.
And I just think that as long as the story's good, the performances are good, the music is brilliant, and I think it has one of the best ending scares of all time. I don't know if you've seen the end of it. But I love that movie. It always holds a special place in my heart for being the first movie that actually really horror movie that actually really scared me.
Well, I'm glad that you phrase it that way, and I'm glad as I've seen a lot of parts of it, I definitely need to see it in one cohesive bout. And I like that you phrased it's a very special place for you, because this last movie that we'll end on for me is Hocus Pocus.
Seriously?
I am dead serious. I am absolutely dead serious. And the reason why I say this for last, because I knew you were going to laugh at me.
No, you're not the only one. I mean, I like that movie too, but you'd be surprised. A lot of people put that on their Halloween list. So.
No, oh, I believe it. I absolutely believe it, because this was another movie that I watched all the time with my mom. And we would always watch Halloween movies together during October. And it's one of the things that I miss about growing up and not living at home is watching those Halloween movies with my family. And Hocus Pocus is just fun. It has so many great one-liners. It's that great mix of funny and macabre that I love, that I kind of gravitate towards. Bette Midler, Kathy and Jimmy, Sarah Jessica Parker as three witches, three sister witches. I mean, that's all you would need to say in the pitch meeting. You know, it's just bam, those three names and then three sister witches. And it's just, I mean, they bite off their tongues and then spit it in a stew. And there's a talking cat, and there's a zombie that's run around that can lose his head but then put it back on. And they lose their brooms, and so they have to use vacuum cleaners. I mean, come on. It's just, I'm laughing just thinking about it.
I will say it's one of the few movies where Sarah Jessica Parker doesn't get on my nerves.
Yeah, it's very much so. I mean, I kind of wish that I could see more of her movies this way. Like, when she was younger, I did like her earlier movies better. But then once Sex and the City happened, it just kind of went,
it's all pre-Sex and the City.
Yeah, this was all pre-Sex and the City, and she is fantastic, and she's funny. And she's also, I don't know if this was actually her voice, but she sings in this movie, and it's a great, creepy, eerie song about luring children into the woods. And yeah, I just I haven't watched this one yet. I'm probably going to save this one for on the day. And yeah, I just I love this movie so much. So is there anything else that you want to add before we close up shop?
I will say, though, as far as horror movies go, I'm always searching for new ones, and I always love discovering new things. So each year I'll watch specials of like 100 scariest movie moments, and you know, I'll get new ideas. But I think we established what we like to do in Halloween in a nutshell, and I just gotta say, with Halloween and other holidays as well, I just like holding on to that very kid aspect of it, because it's such a fun holiday. I mean, I'm 25 years old, and I have a pumpkin waiting for me in my garage that I'm going to carve on Thursday. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that I insist on still having fun with in an adult way. I mean, as I'm carving the pumpkin, there's going to be a scary movie thrown on my TV. So, you know, just watching that sort of thing and just hanging on to what some of the few joys we have left in life, some of the few kid things that we can still do. So, you know, it always has that kind of special place in my heart this time of year, and Christmas too, but I'm sure we'll get to that in December.
Oh yeah, we will definitely get to that in December. And you know what? You put things so well. You describe things so well, and you make it, you help me and the listeners understand what that feeling that we're all, that's all inside us during the season. And that's what it is. It's that desperate grasp to hold on to something that we know and that we love and that we know is fleeting and it's not going to stay with us forever. But watching those movies kind of brings that back and gives us a taste of what it used to be like. Well, thank you so much for listening. This has been a lot of fun to do. Matt, where can we find you online?
You can find me online at mhanson0207 on Twitter.
And you can find me on Twitter as well, at The Insane Robin. Please follow us, talk to us, let us know what you think about the show, give us some ideas of what you'd like to hear. And also, you can write to us via email, contact@thenerdparty.com. And please go to thenerdparty.com. That's where you can find all of our podcasts and how you can listen to every single one via iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, everything that you can, in any way that you can imagine. And please, please, please give us a review. Give us a review on iTunes or on Stitcher or anywhere else, anywhere that you listen, subscribe to us. And if you write us a 5-star review, we'll give you a shout out on the podcast. And we want to thank you for listening, and hopefully you'll listen next week.
Thanks for listening, guys. I'm Matt Hansen.
And I'm Tristan Riddell.
And we hope you have a safe Halloween. And remember, it's Halloween, so everyone's entitled to one good scare.
Coming up next week.
Since the dawn of existence, there have always been moments when the course of history shifted. Such a turning point is upon us now.
They wish to cure us, but I say we are the cure.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Sounds fantastic! Another round, so what's this sound?
Oi, come back here!
That's a gang of larcenous gibbons making off with someone's treasured marimba. But what's this sound?
Go compare!
That's the sound telling millions of canny householders where to look to save on their insurance.
For the right on cover, you'll soon discover nothing quite compares to Go Compare!
Sounds fantastic!